You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning. Welcome to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. The time is exactly 9 o'clock on this brisk fall Friday morning in Chicago. And with me...
This will be one of the first shows in a long time where my voice is a little deeper than yours because of my...
I'm getting out of a little respiratory condition
that seems to be going around the university. So
the last week, that's the voice of the one and only Wayne Magyar's vice president and chief of staff of Loyola University, Chicago.
Nice to see you.
It's great to see you. It's been about 3 weeks since we have been together on the radio. So you've been sick about the last week.
Man, just kind of, I don't know, just annoying.
Well, if you go into a real, hit a real cough or just.
Right. If you're going to a real bad spell, you just haven't had your oils with you, so that's good.
I will take over. But look at, Wayne, the incredible month of October with weather that we started a week ago Sunday through the following Sunday, last Sunday, broke the record 8 consecutive days, each day 100% sunshine, Monday beautiful, Tuesday beautiful, Wednesday. Yesterday, the first day, it really rained. So if anybody were to say, what a lousy month of October we've had. Nothing will ever please them. So we have a great
Sister
program.
Patricia, this
lined
is what
up.
Happens. We end up talking about the weather when the Sox are out of it by now, of course.
Cubs
and the
are
Bears
long
are
out
not,
of it.
And the Bears are not doing too well.
Bears so are struggling.
We morph into the weather. Bulls otherwise, this would have been sounded like ESPN.
Bulls aren't going to play. Blackhawks are doing well. Exactly. The Cubs now have Theo Epstein, which is pretty good. We have with us in studio Sister Patricia Crowley, Prioress of St. Scholastica Monastery in Chicago, is with us to discuss the 150th anniversary of the Benedictine Sisters. Sister Patricia Crowley, welcome to Catholic Community Faith.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you here, Sister Patricia. And now, you have just celebrated, or in the throes of your 150th years in as a community, and you arrived in Chicago then when?
August 23rd, 1861.
Could you be more specific?
Exactly. So I don't know what time.
Father Greg was just a young priest then.
Right.
Just leaving the seminary. Uh-huh. And is it three sisters came to Chicago?
Right. They came from Erie, Pennsylvania. And the Erie sisters had just begun there, had come from St. Mary's, Pennsylvania. And just before that, they came from Eichstätt, Germany. And they came here from Erie to staff a very small school in the other room of the building they lived in for St. Joseph's Parish, which was on the corner of Wabash and Chicago Avenue. If you go by there,
which is really not too far from here.
Yeah. Right around the corner.
Guys, only a couple blocks. Did you realize that they arrived in Chicago in the earliest throes of the Civil War?
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
That's amazing.
And you know, like many religious orders, the Benedictine sisters came here at the request, in this case, or in your case, of the abbot at the time, to meet a very specific need, right?
That's right. It was the need of the German immigrant children that were being served by St. Joseph's Parish, and the monks from St. Vincent's Abbey in Pennsylvania were staffing that parish at the time.
I mean, that's just amazing. Now, with your own story, you know, you mentioned to us off the air that you were a graduate of St. Scholastica High School, and then tell us how the call to religious life, of course, it's a gift from God, how it unfolded in your own life.
Well, my parents were Pat and Patty Crowley, very active in the Christian family movement.
Very well known. Everybody knew Mom and Dad.
Right. One of the things that they discovered early in their CFM days was the value of the Benedictine rule, and they became lay oblates up at St. John's Abbey. My father took the name of Placid, and my mother took the name of Francis after Francis of Rome. And my father loved the notion of the rule of consulting, of being the abbot. He was the abbot of the house, of course, and of consulting all the members of the household about decisions that had to be made, and especially the youngest. And he loved St. Benedict's approach to life of moderation. He, being a good Irishman, enjoyed a a drink once in a while. And Benedict really says that the monks can drink wine.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they were in Italy. Talks about a hemina, which nobody knows what that is. But he enjoyed that. And I learned the rule, the spirit of the rule, from my parents. And then when I was ready to go to school, I was raised in Wilmette and went to St. Joseph's Parish in Wilmette. And when I was ready to go to high school, I wanted to go with all my friends, but my parents had heard about St. Scholastica and about the emphasis on the best-kept secret in the Catholic Church, which is Catholic social teaching, and they wanted me to be trained in that. So actually, my mother worked. I could not get in because St. Scholastica was too full, and so my mother sold New World subscriptions so that I got a scholarship, and they had to accept me, as she said. Mm-hmm. So I went there.
So your mother was selling New World subscriptions.
Yeah.
She sold that many that garnered you a scholarship.
Right.
And then you were accepted to St. Scholastica.
I had to be accepted, so the rest is history. I went there. I did go away to college for a year and then came back. But I was very impressed with the women and the community that were our teachers at the time. And, you know, women who were very much in touch with who they were and loved the church and, you know, practiced monasticism, sung the office, you know, every day. And I just loved that. I lived a very active life at home, but I'm a person who loves silence and prayer, and so it was a good fit for me.
And the work of the order, both today and also when you joined, is not only education, but also a parish work, because the Benedictine sisters have been very visible throughout many parishes in the Archdiocese of Chicago, especially over the past several decades, right?
Right. I think we staffed 8 parishes in the course of our history, and we were the first in a number of those parishes, like St. Joseph's on Orleans, because after the Chicago Fire in 1971, the sisters had to go north, and eventually they ended up at the corner of Orleans and Hill, which is currently the St. Joseph's Church and school, but it's part of Immaculate Conception Parish on North Park.
You also staffed Queen of All Saints.
We were at Queen of All Saints. We were St. Lambert's.
Muskogee.
St. Symphorosa.
My old parish on the south side.
Is that right?
I got a plug for that. Yeah.
Oh, I knew there was a connection.
Yeah. That's why you are the way you are today.
That's it.
Yeah. And yeah. One question, just stepping back for a second, Sister Patricia, and that is, as you were leaving eighth grade and all your friends were going to another high school in the Wilmette area, probably, what, New Trier or something?
Probably Marywood.
Oh, Marywood. Okay,
For
sure.
The most part.
In Evanston.
It was not the era for Catholic grammar school children to go to public school.
And then when you went to St. Scholastica, was it in your mind at all entering high school about religious life?
Well, I had the school sisters of St. Francis in grammar school.
At St. Joseph.
And a couple of my friends in grammar school entered right from grammar school to that community. Mm. I did think about that. My parents didn't think that was a great idea. and they didn't think it was a great idea to enter after high school either.
We are talking with Sister Patricia Crowley, who is the prioress of St. Scholastica Monastery here in Chicago, talking about the 150th anniversary of the Benedictine Sisters and the rich call to vocation that Sister Pat has shared with us as well. You're listening to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. It's 9:09 in the morning. We'll be right back.
Each night,
thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through, Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, "You know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in?" And gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, "Is this something you can do?" And I looked at her and says, "You're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now, and I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head."
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298. Or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith. Friday morning in Chicago, 9:11, Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m. Wayne Majors and Father Greg Sackwitz with you. Our guest is Sister Patricia Crowley, who is the Priorist of St. Scholastica Monastery, located right here on the Ridge in Chicago.
Your voice is still holding out.
It's holding out. We got 48 minutes to go, and but who's counting? One of the parts of the rich history of the Benedictine sisters, Sister Patricia, is missionary work, which is probably something that a lot of our listeners may not know about. Tell us a little bit about the missionary history of the sisters.
Well, the theme of our community has always been to serve where there's need. So, as I mentioned before, we came here to serve German immigrant children. And we, of course, stayed in the inner city parishes at St. George and St. Joseph's, you know, which very much missionary work. And as we mentioned, in other schools in the archdiocese. I mean, we have done things. Some Benedictines did found missions in other countries. You know, the Atchison Benedictines have a mission in Brazil and also in Mexico. Our community didn't do that kind of mission work, but rather here. In addition to St. Scholastica Academy, which has been in existence for a very long time.
1907?
That's right.
What a good guess, Wayne.
That was excellent.
Wow.
Excellent.
How about Sports for 300?
St. Scholastica Academy has served, you know, thousands of women, and it's an amazing legacy and continues to this day to serve a great variety of young women with the International Baccalaureate program there, as well as a college preparatory track for students who don't want to take the International Baccalaureate. And it's a great mixture. There's no dominant race or culture. It's just reflects our world and prepares young women to go into that world in a leadership role.
Now, maybe
you
won't be able to answer this question, Sister Patricia, but when St. Scholastica High School, right on Ridge Road, which is just south into Chicago, bordering the southern part of Evanston there on Ridge, and it's a beautiful high school and monastery in the grounds. How did your community acquire that property? I'm always fascinated how property was formed or bought. We're talking well over 100 years ago. Maybe that's an unfair question.
No, I don't know the specifics of the purchase, but I know that most monasteries in this country and all over the world, I was just in West Africa visiting some monasteries, most of them are way out in the country because the idea of monastic life is to, you know, create an atmosphere in which one can really nurture the seeking of God through that life. And so when we bought that property in 1906, that was country.
It really was.
You know, yeah, it was within the city limits.
Similarly with the Jesuits at the Lakeshore campus. I mean,
true.
Our first
or even with St. Mary the Lake Seminary at Mundelein, Cardinal Mundelein wanted property away, way out in the boondocks. And Mundelein, which is called an area Illinois, was considered way out.
Yeah. And so we bought, and we bought, I forget how many acres, but it went from Ridge to Western. Mm. Right. Wait, now it goes from Ridge to Bell.
Originally it was Ridge to Western.
And we sold the property between Bell and Western to build the school, first school building in 1924.
You had that original huge piece of property, which is still huge today.
Yeah. You know, one of the interesting dimensions that I actually learned from your current president, Laura Namovic, in St. Scholastica, is the amount of care, attention, and time that is really spent to the pedagogy of single-sex education and how that brings a richness not only in the classroom, but a richness to the mission of St. Scholastica and how that relates to the Benedictine order. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think I think that's absolutely true. And I think the world is kind of catching up with the value of single-sex education again. It's even being mentioned now for young men, not just for young women. But the Benedictines nurture strong women. I mean, if you look back in centuries, Scholastica was a strong woman. Hildegard of Bingen governed monasteries of men and women and, you know, established a whole tradition of healing remedies and chant, and Gertrude and Mechtild and Walburg. You could go on and on of very, very strong women. And I think it's in that tradition that, you know, we have nurtured and developed St. Scholastica Academy in that vein. Yeah.
So there really is a tremendous history within the Benedictine sisters, and then it's reflected with St. Scholastica High School. So if a parent were to come to you and say, why should our daughter attend St. Scholastica High School, what would you tell them, Sister Patricia?
I would tell them that St. Scholastica offers a rich curriculum. It is based in faith, based in the Benedictine tradition of reverence for all things and of respect for the individual and consultative kind of living, and that there are just many opportunities for their daughter to both be nurtured and to be challenged in that atmosphere.
I do know at St. Scholastica, being right down the street from where I'm at St. Mary's and Evanston as pastor, is, and I knew this before I arrived, the tremendous one-on-one attention a young lady can receive from faculty. It was that it's, in your words, you're not lost at St. Scholastica, but somehow you're part of a community and well-known individual. We're going to go to break here on Catholic Community Faith. The time is 9:18 on this beautiful fall morning in Chicago. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Wayne Majars, and our guest, Sister Patricia Crowley, the Prioress of St. Scholastica Monastery in Chicago. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. If you're an alum of St. Scholastica High School, give us a call. We'll be back right after this break, and do not touch that dial.
Hello, I'm Margie Mansko-Breen of the Respect Life office, inviting you to the 9th annual Educating Minds, Inspiring Hearts dinner to benefit the wonderful work of our Chastity Education Initiative. Join Cardinal Francis George on Sunday, October 16th at the Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace. Our guest speaker is former fashion model Leah Darrow, who will share her courageous story of rediscovering her Catholic faith. For more information and to register for the event, go to respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355. That's 312-534-5355 or visit respectlifechicago.org.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at CatholicNewWorld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Friday morning in Chicago, Sister Patricia Crowley, who's the prioress of St. Scholastica Monastery, is our guest, celebrating it's the sesquicentennial.
That's right.
Say that 10 times.
Sesquicentennial of the Benedictine sisters. Lots of other ministries that the sisters have been involved in over their rich history. Sister Patricia, tell us about some more of them.
Some of our sisters, it began in the 1970s, you know, when we were looking at where is there need that, you know, we can respond to. And some of our sisters, both in Colorado and in Chicago, worked in the prisons. Particularly Sister Miriam Wilson led that activity and worked as one of the first women chaplains at the Cook County Jail for the Archdiocese. And some of us also volunteered in that ministry and at the federal prison when it was built at the corner of Van Buren and Clark. I did on Sunday, every Sunday for about 30 years, I went there.
And you did prison ministry?
Yes, because there's just one floor of women at that facility, and so they don't move around much.
Was that the same time that you were head of Deborah's Place?
Well, it began prior to that. It began when I was actually at St. Scholastica Academy teaching, and then I ran the Howard Area Community Center in Rogers Park for about 10 years, and then I ran Deborah's Place for another 13. And that was, it was all during those times. And then I ran the Continuum of Care for Chicago, which is a private-public partnership around homelessness in the city of Chicago. And so it was all during that time.
So you have spent much of your life, in religious life, working with the poor and the homeless.
I have.
This is something kind of new for you right now as a prioress.
I was elected in 2007, and it's a new arena.
And you were just reelected.
I was just reelected.
Was it another 3-year term?
It's a 3-year term, and I've had the opportunity to serve on the board of the National LCWR, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, and now I'm a delegate for the CIB, which in Latin is the Communionis Internationalis Benedictinarum, which is the Communion of International Benedictine Women. So, I've had a lot of opportunity for that. There are a number of other people that have served in social services, both at Grace House here on the west side of Chicago and at Providence. Maternity BVM
sure,
has a center.
Sure.
And in the west, Sister Karen runs the Catholic Outreach on the western slope of Colorado in Grand Junction and is building housing, as we did at Deborah's Place, for people who are homeless. We've also had a number of people have gone into spiritual direction and counseling, pastoral counseling primarily. Several of them were on the staff of the Institute for Spiritual Leadership, Sister Suzanne Zurcher, Patricia Coughlin, and Mary Milady. And in the early years, you know, our Sister Cecilia was very influential in liturgical at changes and writing about.
The Benedictines have always been involved with the cutting edge of literature.
And she also was involved in CISCA, the Summer School of Catholic Action. So, and Sister Dolores Schorsch in our community with her brother, who was a priest of the Archdiocese, did the religion textbooks that were revolutionized. Yeah.
You know, like most religious orders, I would imagine the Benedictine sisters for the last several decades, especially as the number of sisters has declined, spends a lot of time and attention and prayer toward how can we transmit our charism, our way of life, our way of working in our ministries to the laity in so many different ways, in so many different ministries, as you've outlined. Talk a little bit about how you do that and how, as a community, you work to really carry on the work and mission of the Benedictine sisters among your lay colleagues.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have over 100 oblates. That's the lay following of the spirituality of the Benedictine order. And they connect with us in person or online. We have them here in Chicago and in Colorado, some online, so a couple from Indiana who come in. So there's a lot of spreading out of that through them and also through our alums from St. Scholastica Academy here. The students very much learn the Benedictine values and the Benedictine way of life. And we closed our academy in Canyon City, Colorado in 2001. But that also, you know, those students convey that. We recently, to celebrate our 150th, had a big event. About 750 people came to hear Sister Joan Chittister talk about a new thing called Monasteries of the Heart, kind of challenging people wherever they are in small groups to learn the Benedictine spirituality, you know, and study the rule and, you know, live it there because it's such a really rich spirituality that can be practiced. And I know there were a lot of social action people there, and a couple of them said to me and also to Sister Joan, well, maybe we need to focus on spirituality a little bit more,
you know,
not
I find
just
that
on action.
When you're talking the rule of Benedict and the Benedictine way of life, it truly is a way of life that it doesn't put you apart from the world, but puts you into the world and to be able to, when I hear so much of the great work that the Benedictine sisters are doing regarding social justice, reaching out for the poor, if that isn't an incredible way of life, I don't know what is. And also at the high school, a tremendous number of alum who are always so proud to say, I'm from St. Scholastica High School, you know, class of 97, class of 87, class of 55, whatever it might be. But there's always that outreach. As you look into the future, Sister Patricia, and if you had a crystal ball, where do you see the whole community going, the Benedictine community?
Well, I think the last question that you asked was very pertinent. Our numbers will be smaller, as numbers of most women religious communities will be into the future. And I think the idea that is emerging, and it's still emerging, is that, you know, we convey our spirit. You know, the Benedictine rule doesn't just do social justice. It certainly can be read that way. But it does a balance of life. You know, that's really integral to the Benedictine way of work and prayer, kind of balance through the day. It does a love of learning. Both of those are so important in our society that moves so quickly and, you know, has
before
everything.
Before we bring this segment to a close, if some young lady wanted to learn more about the Benedictine sisters or a family wanted to learn more about St. Scholastica High School, give us a phone number that they could possibly call.
Sure. For the Academy, 773-764-5715.
That number once again?
773-764-5715.
And what about the Benedictine sisters?
And the sisters, it would be, you could reach it through that number during the day, but 773-764-5715. 2413, and my extension's 230 if you want to call.
Okay, well, I want to thank in a very special way Sister Patricia Crowley, the Prioress of St. Scholastica Monastery here in Chicago. Thank you for joining us, Sister Patricia. You are so well known and loved by so many, a woman of deep faith. Keep up the great work that you do. You are listening to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950. The time is coming up on 9:30 on this Friday morning in Chicago. Father Greg Sackwitz along with Wayne Majors will be back right after a break.
Thank you.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
If you haven't read the Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is written by our publisher, Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities throughout Cook and Lake Counties.
Are you constantly on the go? Then stay connected to your church by visiting CatholicNewWorld.com and sign up to follow us on Twitter.
That's CatholicNewWorld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and if you haven't already, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777.
Your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back to Catholic Community Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz along with Wayne Majors. Time is coming up on 9:33 on this Friday morning in Chicago. And Wayne, as we mentioned earlier, we've gone from summer-like weather to typical fall weather. And but it's a beautiful day. And any plans for the weekend?
It is. It's Friday. That's the best part about it.
You're right.
What are your plans
right.
for the weekend?
This week has seemed like a month. I don't know about the rest of you.
You've been quite busy with things going on at Loyola University. Any plans for the weekend? Or?
No, not much. Just R&R.
That sounds like a plan.
And get your health totally back.
That's right.
From your
virus
there. Yeah. We have with us in studio Sister Anita Baird, the Director of the Office for Racial Justice, along with Esther Hicks of our Catholic Schools Office, will join us in studio to talk about the 10th anniversary already of the Cardinal's Pastoral Letter on Racism, Dwell in My Love. Sister Anita and Esther, welcome to Catholic Community of Faith. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Great to see both of you. It's been a while since you've been on the radio with us here.
It has
on,
been.
On Relevant Radio 950. Good. Sister Anita, I can't believe it's the 10th anniversary of Cardinal Francis George's pastoral Dwell in My Love.
It doesn't seem possible.
I mean, when it came out.
It doesn't seem possible. Yeah. Mm. The 10 years has gone so fast, though I have to say that I think I've aged 10 years.
Well, you look younger.
Thank you.
Like I told people, my left knee goes out more than I do. Yeah. I'm getting up there. So tell us about the pastoral, Sister Anita, from 10 years ago.
Well, you know what? I'm going to let Esther start because really this grew out of a horrific event that happened here in Chicago. And the schools community really took the lead. And so I'm going to let her begin with a little bit of setting that stage and then we'll move into the pastoral.
Esther, give us the history.
Well, the history is really a sad one in the sense that we had graduate students from our Catholic high school who had a serious altercation with a young man, and Leonard Clark was his name. And
I remember that vividly.
You remember that vividly. The poor young man was beaten by these young men, and it was an act of racial hatred. There's no other reason for it. And when Cardinal George, at the time, discovered that the young men were graduate students from our Catholic high schools, he was just appalled that this was that this had happened, that this could be the result of what kind of training, I don't know, but that this happened because of an act of hatred. So this was the Dwell in My Love pastoral letter was a result of that, and also a huge immersion of effort on the part of the schools to begin training our teachers about systemic racism. And so for the last 10 years, thanks to Sister Anita and this document and to the support of Cardinal George, we've been able to require that all of the teachers in our system be trained in anti-racism. And we've developed that workshop as a part of a training process that we did with Crossroads, which is another organization that deals with racism here in the United States. And through that venue, we've been able to develop a very fine program for our teachers and for our principals.
And that's really, Sister Anita, what has kind of set this pastoral letter apart, because so many pastoral letters that are written around the world get written, get read, get talked about, and then they kind of die on the vine and sit on a shelf somewhere. Nothing really happens to them. This has really continued to live and thrive and be a foundation for so much of the good work that you and Esther and others do to really keep the sensitivity issues and this issue really alive and in the front burner. Right?
Yeah, that's right, Wayne. The one thing we didn't want was just some words that people would soon forget. We needed to expand it, you know, and I think the Cardinal's commitment, I can't say enough about that, because this is work that is, it takes time. You have to build. You take small steps towards a goal. And our goal has been a awareness within the church of the church's role in systemic racism. And,
Sister Anita, what is the church's role in systemic racism?
I think historically we have struggled in the sense of we have always stood on the side of the gospel, but we have been influenced by society. And so for so long, you saw separate churches and schools. People of color could not go to certain schools, even here in the city of Chicago. I'm not talking about Jackson, Mississippi. Right here in Chicago, churches were segregated.
There was a time a young man, if he were African American, could not enter the major theologate.
You are absolutely right. I think Father Rollins Lambert.
He was the first.
Was
one
the first,
back
and that
in the
was
late
around
40s.
Late 40s. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we see this, and it continues in many ways to play out today. We often say that mostly when people hear race, they want to limit it to black and white. Esther and I talk about this all the time. Well, it's become much more complicated today, and we're a much different world today than we were 60 years ago. So we're looking at new groups coming in here. We're looking at immigration. We're looking at our Latino brothers and sisters who are struggling to be accepted in the churches and the communities where they live even today. So this issue continues to be one that the church has to stand on the right side. And we are so blessed here by Cardinal George's leadership.
And the issues, I would imagine, not only are church-wide, but they're very distinct and different diocesan-wide. And then if you drill down, they're very different and distinct in some ways, even on a parish level, I would imagine. Let's talk about that when we get back, because it's a good area, I think, to pursue. It's 9:39 in the morning. You're listening to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m. We're talking with Sister Anita Baird, who is the Director of the Office of Racial Justice, and Esther Hicks from the Catholic Schools Office here in the Archdiocese. And we'll be right back.
This year, on November 26th and 27th, the Catholic Church all over the United States will begin celebrating the Mass using the English translation of the third edition of the Roman Missal. In much of the prayers, responses, and acclamations, this English translation will no doubt sound a bit different from what we're currently used to in the Mass. The question is, are you ready for these new words? The Office for Divine Worship invites you to a two-hour session of information and reflection, Praying the New Missal Texts, a workshop for all Catholics. There are several sessions scheduled through early November. For dates, times, and locations of the remaining workshops, go to www.odw.org or call 312-534-5153. Don't miss this opportunity for exploring the English translation of the third edition of the Roman Missal. Go to www.odw.org or call 312-534-5153.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in a number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 950 AM. Our telephone number is 312-255-8408, something I have been woefully negligent mentioning during the program. That's 312-255-8408. We'll give you all of you a chance to get a pen and write this down. We'll give it to you one more time before the program is over. Sister Anita Baird, who is the Director of Office for Racial Justice, and Esther Hicks of our Catholic Schools Office is with us on the program this morning. And just before the break, we started to talk about how the Cardinal's pastoral letter of now 10 years ago has really lived, continued to be a living document, not only archdiocesan-wide, but it's gotten attention from outside the archdiocese. And it's really had a lot of applicability, if you will, relevance at the local level, at the church level. Give us an idea of how it has... how it has taken root, Sister Anita, in some of the churches, some of the parishes throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago.
Well, I think at the same time that the pastoral letter was even being written, we had parishes beginning to address the issue of racism and intolerance for people that were different at the time that the schools were also beginning to work. So we, for many years, we did workshops in the parishes. So thousands and thousands of people came together, and we made sure that it was a very diverse group of people. So we had city and suburbs and people in rural areas. We had rich and poor, black, white, and brown, all coming into the same room. And it was an overnight program. program and having this honest conversation about the fears of ordinary people. And that really kind of laid the groundwork at the parish level to begin talking about this issue of race and racism.
Esther, how about in the schools? I would imagine that there's no it's never too early to start talking about the differences of people. It's never too early in the school system to talk about the fact that it's not just you, it's others. And we have a great slogan at the university that we started to launch in our advertising campaign about 9 years ago, and it's of all the slogans we've used, it's the one that has stuck the most. It's, if the world is just about you, you're in the wrong place. And that has really taken root.
Yes.
So what about in the schools?
Right. And you're right. You're never too early to start that awareness development that needs to happen, especially with teachers, because they really are the front line in terms of how they teach to the development of the attitudes of students. That's where we start. And to try to take this away a little bit from just a black-white issue is something that we sort of fall into, is it's more than that. And from the vantage point of the Office of Catholic Schools, we've really developed programs that have taken teachers and principals around the world. They go to Mexico, they go to Israel, they go to Nigeria, so that we break open the awareness horizon to something that's not just a neighborhood thing, but a global thing. And we think that we are impacting the system because of that kind of awareness development that then translates immediately into the classroom. That's one thing. And the other thing about it's never too late. It is too late if somebody is harmed, and we still have those issues. Harm is done to students who don't feel that they are accepted in whatever the society is, whether it's the classroom or the neighborhood. And so when those kinds of things happen, there's an intervention. So all kinds of things are happening at many different levels.
But you talk about the classroom, Esther. Mm-hmm. You know, it's never too young to begin with a child, but also then the need to get to the parents.
Yes.
Because we can do all the work we want in the classroom, but sometimes I think parents forget they are the primary teachers of their children, of their child in the ways of faith, about how we treat one another, that God is colorblind. And so then I'm sure that part of the work you're doing is not only toward the child, but with families, with parents.
Yes, and parent awareness among parents is also a very critical issue. And I think it's one that is always there. It's always there, prevalent. And so we do make efforts to communicate with parents, to share the mission of the school, which is a mission of inclusion. Every one of our schools has mission statements that talk about that. So we do communicate with parents and we interact with them to develop a deeper understanding of how racism impacts our cultures today.
Sister Nita, after 10 years, and as Esther mentioned at the beginning of the program, precipitated by a very unfortunate incident, after 10 years, though, of this pastoral letter living in the Archdiocese of Chicago and elsewhere, what has surprised you most on what has come out of it that maybe you would have never anticipated 10 years ago?
Oh, that's a good question. I think in terms of what has surprised me, number one, is that we are still committed to this. You know, so often we start something and we go gung-ho and it kind of dies out.
It begins to fizzle.
Exactly. So I think the long-term commitment. I think the second thing that somewhat surprises me is that there is still strong resistance to the reality of systemic racism. There's that sense that, you know, we elected a black man as president, and so therefore we're living in a post-racial society. And when we do the workshops, we hear that a lot. And that surprises me because, yes, we have come a long ways. And in 2001, if someone had told me that 10 years later we would have a black president, I would not have believed it. However, it does not speak again to the injustice and the struggle of people of color that are still at the bottom, the first to lose jobs. In terms of unemployment in the black community, it's double what it is nationally. When we look at education, the infrastructure is crumbling. And then when we look at inner cities, we look at the tremendous struggle that our archdiocese and the Office of Catholic Schools has in trying to maintain and keep open Catholic schools in the inner city, which is kind of like the last hope for so many people.
We're going to talk more about it. We're going to go to a break here on Catholic Communion Faith. But one thing I want to share is this 10th anniversary of Do All of My Love, the Pastor by the Cardinal. But some of the other words on the page, on the cover, race equality, shared power, shared responsibility, full participation in decision-making by diverse racial, cultural, and economic groups. We're going to talk more about that, because you just mentioned about the long way to go. Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Wayne Madgers, and our guests are Sister Anita Baird and Esther Hicks. Be back right after a break.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
During the next half hour, we'll take you to World Youth Day in Madrid, where 1.5 million young adult Catholics from around the globe gathered in prayer and celebration with the Holy Father. We'll attend a multi-faith 9/11 memorial service 10 years after that fateful day. And we'll visit with the man who heads our vocations office and find out what he's doing to foster vocations within the Archdiocese.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You. Compelling television about your archdiocese.
Game with the Catholic Charities Junior Board for a good cause. Saturday, November 12th is the Junior Board's signature fundraiser, and we hope you'll join us. The 5th annual Charities Royale Casino Night and Silent Auction will take place at the beautiful St. Ignatius College Prep. We have an A-list lineup with live music by Underwater People, delicious food from Cafe Bianda, 3 open bars, blackjack, craps, roulette, an incredible lineup of silent auction and raffle items, including 2 trips to the Bahamas, and much more. Tickets are only $80 and are on sale now at CatholicCharities.net/JRBoard. This black tie optional event is open to anyone over the age of 21. More than half of your ticket price will go directly to the Catholic Charities Emergency Assistance Programs, providing food, clothing, shelter, and other crucial emergency services to the poorest of the poor in Cook and Lake Counties. Game with us for a good cause. For details, call Lisa at 312-655-7932 or visit CatholicCharities.net/JRBoard.
Welcome back into the program. Sister Anita Baird is with us, and so is Esther Hicks from the Catholic Schools Office, talking about the Cardinal's 10th anniversary of his pastoral letter, Dwell in My Love. Earlier, Sister Anita, we asked you what surprised you most in the past 10 years that this letter has been living in the Archdiocese and elsewhere. But what has disappointed you? Any disappointments looking back?
Well, you know, maybe disappointment isn't the best word to use, but certainly areas that we still need to work with. And I think one thing that still surprises me, and we know we have to continue at it, is even the diversity in terms of leadership. Mm-hmm. You see, when you talk about systemic racism, you're talking about power being held by a particular group of people, and that power it's not opened up so that all people are invited to the table and they have a voice and a say in terms of decisions that will impact their lives. You know, and when we look even at the Pastoral Center, we still do not have enough people of color in major decision-making roles in the Archdiocese. We know that. We know we struggle even in terms of our seminary system and attracting young men of color into the seminary system so that they can go through and represent their communities and be there for their people. I think another thing is that people still want to deny that there is no such thing as systemic racism, that everything is fine. And we really don't need to discuss this. The civil rights movement was 50 years ago. It's over. Let's move on. And then the last thing I think that I think could make a major impact that we really haven't done, and that is the commitment to preach the gospel about the sin of racism from the pulpit in our churches and to do it on a consistent basis, because that's where the conversion happens. That's where we're called to be the people of God. That's where Eucharist happens. But so often pastors shy away from doing that because of the fallout they feel will happen.
What is that fallout? Is it a fear of saying the wrong thing? Is it just a general discomfort that that maybe they're not going to be able to make that linkage between gospel and the sin of racism in the right way? Is it their own internal biases in some cases about racism and diversity and the ability to?
I think, Wayne, we could say it's all of the above. It's never easy. When we do the workshops and we stand up there, we get pushback, you know, even from people who are committed to education and to children having a better world, but still, our own personal bias, the way we were raised, the communities we live in, play an impact.
I'll give you an example. At the heart of racism is fear.
Yes.
And when we have a posture of fear, and we may not even be aware of it, there is a defensiveness within the individual. So when we're afraid of something or fearful, we need to ask the person, well, how do you feel? Well, I feel defensive. So when you talk about racism, I truly believe at the heart of racism is fear. And now some people say, oh, not me, never. I would never be that way. But sometimes it's like almost like tackling fog. You put your arms around it and it's gone. So if I'm tackling you, you hit somebody and you bring them down. If you're tackling fog, you put your arms around it and it's gone. And that's sometimes I think with racism in someone's heart, oh, I'm not racist. I have no fear. They can't even name it in their own lives. Am I right or wrong?
Right. I think you're absolutely right. And there is that sense of fear or being labeled. And, you know, we all struggle to be good people. So we often say people don't wake up in the morning saying, today I'm going to see if I can be the worst racist in the world. We fail to understand that we are all victimized, whether we're black, white, and brown, by a system that has existed for a long time.
And it's done in subtle ways.
In very subtle ways.
It's very, in very subtle ways. Yeah. It's not really overt, but it's in ways. And in fact, I've been in a talk with you, Sister Anita. You gave a wonderful, it's eluding me right now, the subtlety of racism. And I'll think of it about 10:15, we're off the air. And it,
is very subtle. The signs, separate but equal, no longer exist. Mm-hmm. Okay, the laws of the land have been changed. So we see that. So therefore, we don't see racism in our face each and every day.
I think another very significant issue, the fear factor is a major one, but I also think something else that plays against us is the guilt that people feel. And this is not a kind of an overt guilt. This is a very internalized guilt that we as whites have. And when we talk about anti-racism, one of the things in our workshops, one of the things that we get questioned about constantly is, why call it anti-racism? Why can't we call it a diversity workshop? Why can't we call it something else? And I think some of that is coming from this feeling of guilt. If I call it anti-racism, that means I have to own the word racism.
Yeah.
So that's a piece of this. And we don't like to feel guilty. We don't want to feel blamed for the past. But it's the need to move ourselves always into the present moment and say it exists now. How do we address it now and get rid of the guilt about the past so that we can move forward?
And the words are important because we tend to migrate toward those words and descriptions that keep us comfortable.
Yes, exactly. Right? Exactly.
So to the extent that this letter has really raised the consciousness in all of us of being able to address it head on, it's really made an impact.
Yes, I would say absolutely it has made an impact.
And on that note, we need to bring the program to a close.
Did I mention the phone number?
Oh, yeah, how about, yeah, 312-255-8408 as we go off the air. We'd like to thank in a very special way. Oh, yeah,
yes.
What's happening tonight?
Just quickly, tonight we're having a celebration in honor of the 10th anniversary with Cardinal George at Catholic Theological Union, 6 p.m. this evening.
And be there, and want to thank in a special way Sister Anita Baird, the Director of the Office for Racial Justice, and Esther Hicks of our Catholic Schools of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Thank you for being with us. Thanks also to co-host Wayne Magyars. Hope you are feeling better, Wayne. To our wonderful producer, Jim Dish, great engineering by Michael May. To our listeners, may God bless all of you, and may the Bears show up on Sunday evening.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.